We're going to go on to Nissan North America versus Jim Malladay. Last time around, I called it Malady. Malady. Thank you.
Still looks like Malady.
Doesn't
it? It sure does.
Come on up, Mr. Russell.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Russell, and I represent the appellant, Nissan North America. The issue on appeal is whether the district court erred by granting Malady's summary judgment motion. The standard is one of de novo review, with all evidence viewed in Nissan's favor. The district court found that the dealer agreement, including amendment number 4, which contains the arbitration provision, expired automatically on May 1, 1999, and on that basis held that Malady's statutory protest over the termination of that same dealer agreement, which it filed some 18 months later, was not arbitrable. In granting summary judgment for Malady, the district court ignored Nissan's equitable estoppel argument, improperly rejected Nissan's fact-intensive waiver argument, and incorrectly weighed the evidence in rejecting Nissan's implied agreement argument.
Well, you argued that this court hasn't decided the equitable estoppel issue, and that you should have the right to raise it here, but you raised it in the first appeal in a half-hearted manner. We found it waived. Why would we allow you to raise it again when you had a full opportunity to raise it the first time and waived it? That would be a very poor use of the court's resources to allow you to now raise an issue that could have resolved the case on the very first appeal.
The first appeal arose in a very unusual procedural context when the lower court, Judge Guzman, had compelled arbitration in the context of granting a motion to dismiss. The issue that came up was one of arbitrability, whether the arbitrator or the court would decide arbitrability. And in that context, Malady raised a host of issues, numerous issues in footnotes and elsewhere, that would be decided by that arbitrator or the court. And we address equitable estoppel in that context, to be sure, briefly.
Well, let me ask you this question. Isn't it true that the dealer explicitly rejected the arbitration provision that Nissan proposed in Amendment 5?
You agree
with that?
It did.
So then here's my problem. How could the dealer have impliedly agreed to any arbitration agreement?
Because
when there was a specific rejection.
At the time of that rejection, the parties were doing business under the dealer agreement and amendment number 4, pursuant to an exchange of letters by the parties. Nissan had made that proposal by letter dated June 27. Malady had accepted it by letter dated June 6. That provided for a 90-day extension of the dealer agreement, including the arbitration provision. It was during that time, as the parties were negotiating for the period beyond the extension, that we proposed arbitration in Amendment number 5, and it was rejected. The parties were still doing business under Amendment number 4. That's recognized in the notice of termination by Nissan and in the notice of protest by Malady.
Right. But Amendment 5 was still rejected, even as this was going on.
But Amendment number 4 never went away. Amendment number 4 was in place throughout that period up to and including October 3, 2000.
Well, in looking at your briefs, what I was wondering about was that even if Malati was wrong to argue to us last time that there was an oral agreement that expressly abandoned Amendment 4. It's a little annoying, but why does that error matter? Because it seems that there was no need for the parties to expressly abandon Amendment number 4 when it expired by its own terms. It just seems to me that the only relevant question here is whether there is a current written contract that contains an agreement to arbitrate, and there doesn't seem to be such a contract.
Here's why it matters, Your Honor. We have powerful arguments, I believe, on waiver, estoppel, and implied agreement. Those
waiver is go ahead.
Those arguments establish what it is the parties are doing business under and have been since May 1, 1999. When you asked Malati about this oral agreement that expressly abandoned number 4, that answer was a complete response to waiver and estoppel and implied agreement, because if it existed, it would replace all of those. The record is now clear, because it's before Your Honors, that oral agreement never existed. And the inability of Malati to explain today the dealer agreement under which the parties are doing business, we contend strongly supports our arguments on waiver, estoppel, and implied agreement.
This whole case has me in a bit of a tizzy. You're still doing business?
Yes, Your Honor. We are obligated to do business, Your Honor, by virtue of the filing of that notice of protest, which keeps the dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4, in place.
You know, you're like a divorced couple that is living in the same house.
We are bound by Illinois law to stay in that house.
You argued that the Illinois statute of frauds doesn't allow an oral agreement for this kind of franchise altogether, but wouldn't partial performance solve that problem?
I think partial performance in a sales context could solve the problem as to a particular transaction, but it would have no effect after that particular transaction.
Wow.
But to return to equitable estoppel, we are in the position of a party who, by virtue of the filing of that notice of protest, which claims the dealer agreement and Amendment Number 4 as its current franchise, of being compelled to do business with this dealer pursuant to the written dealer agreement. The dispute between the parties is one over the termination of that dealer agreement. If Malati doesn't want to arbitrate that dispute, which is clearly arbitrable, it has the keys to its freedom. It can dismiss that dispute on the grounds that the dealer agreement has expired, and the parties will be left to whatever agreement, if any, governs their relations. It has not done so. Instead, it has enjoyed the benefits of that dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4, for almost 6 years. With respect to waiver, we have 4 clear letters signed by authorized vice presidents of Nissan extending the period of time that these parties are going to do business under the dealer agreement. Waiver is not a matter of offer and acceptance, and it doesn't depend on what Malati does or doesn't do. It's a unilateral action, and it's the intent of Nissan in waiving the expiration date that's material here. The district court completely rejected that argument and said the dealer agreement expired automatically. If you look at the notice of default that Nissan sent to Malati on April 14, the notion that that's not a waiver doesn't make any sense. We gave Malati 60 days in which to cure its default under an existing dealer agreement that by its terms would expire on May 1, 1999. That expiration date would occur 17 days into the cure. Obviously, Nissan intended that that dealer agreement would remain in effect throughout the cure period. That same point can be made about each of the written waivers that Nissan sent to Malati. And Malati wasn't forced to accept these. Malati played a central role in inducing Nissan to waive that expiration date. On May 17, 1999, Malati represented directly to Nissan that it fully intended to be bound by and honor the term sales and service agreement. That doesn't sound like a waived dealer agreement. The same thing holds true when you get to 2000. In 2000, on April 14, 2000, Malati came to Nissan and said, extend my dealer agreement so that I have a franchise to sell. I'm involved in negotiations with the buyer. If you don't take action to extend my dealer agreement, I'll have nothing to sell. Induced by Malati, Nissan sent a letter dated May 8, 2000, which effectively waived the expiration date of the agreement and gave Malati something to sell, a current franchise. And we've already talked about the exchange of letters in June and July of 2000, which once again gave Malati something to sell as it was involved in buy-sell negotiations. This is conduct by both parties, waivers, and inducements of waiver that act as estoppel that had the effect of keeping that dealer agreement in effect. That's why it's no surprise when you get to October that when Nissan issued a notice of termination, because Malati never cured its default and it never entered into a buy-sell, what Nissan chose to terminate was the dealer agreement, including amendment number 4. That is what the parties had been operating under. And that's why when Malati filed its notice of protest with the Motor Vehicle Review Board, it specified that written contract as its current franchise. If the panel has no further questions, I'd like to reserve my balance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Russell. Mr. Chiuoli?
May it please the court, I'm James Gioli. I represent Malati, James Malati Oldsmobile, Jim Malati Oldsmobile and Nissan.
You know, you pretty clearly argued last time there was an oral agreement that expressly abandoned Amendment 4. All three of us asked you questions.
And I reviewed that transcript very carefully, Your Honor, and I reprinted portions of it in our brief so that I could put it in context for you. And I'll try again, because I think, number one, it's fair to...
Well, let me just say this. When I look at the deposition transcripts for Mr. Malati, he seems to deny he knows about any oral contract. What we've got to know is this. What agreement has been governing the parties' relationship since Amendment 4 expired? Is it an oral agreement? Is it an agreement whose terms are set by course of dealing? Is there some written contract? No matter how...
Well, there's certainly no written contract, but I think...
What are the terms? No
right.
matter how it was formed... What is going on with you two?
Well, Your Honor, with respect, if I could just say, in some sense, while that is an interesting question and one might be curious about, that
very,
really...
since we see you every Monday and Friday.
But that, and that's a pleasure, but for us. But that is certainly not the issue of this case. The point in this case is the written agreement expired, and continuing to do business with each other does not automatically mean that the written agreement was extended. And the interesting thing here, and why this gets confusing and why we go around the block so many times over it, is this is an action brought under the Federal Arbitration Act, where there is this unique question that would not exist if we were here on the underlying contract.
But and when that you unique filed your... Look, when you filed your protest with the Motor Vehicle Review Board.
Yes.
You listed Amendment 4 as the dealership agreement currently in place.
What?
And, I mean, isn't that evidence that Mulati considered the written agreement containing Amendment 4 to be the agreement currently governing the relationship?
No.
No.
It's not. And the reason it's not, Your Honor, is that under the form and under the requirements of the board, what Mulati was required to do and did do was forward to the board the termination, the purported termination that Nissan served on Mulati. What Mulati listed was what Nissan listed in its letter to Mulati.
Okay, hold on for 1 second, because got to get it clear. What franchise agreement is before the board?
Excellent question. The statute, and let me predicate my answer by saying that the statute in question specifically anticipates and allows car dealership franchises to be on oral arrangements or in writing. And what was before the board and what Mulati protested was the termination of his franchise. What was that franchise? He sells Nissans. He orders them, they provide them, and he sells them. And that being done as an oral arrangement, and here I simply mean the word oral in the sense that there was no overarching written agreement governing that relationship after the expiration of the written dealer agreement. He is absolutely entitled under Illinois law to protest the termination of that franchise.
I'm still not following that because, you know, before the Illinois Motor Vehicle Review Board, you know, just as Judge Rovner asked, you know, you relied on Amendment 4. I guess I wasn't tracking that. I just still don't understand why you shouldn't
let me address that.
By that representation that the dealer agreement was the governing agreement.
Let me address that. It's overstating what Mulati filed to say that Mulati relied on the written dealer agreement in making the protest. In all of Mulati's substantive pleadings before the board, which are in the record before you, every place where Mulati took a substantive position, Mulati's consistent position has been that the written dealer agreement expired on its own terms. What Mulati did in the filing of the initial forms was simply tender Nissan's purported termination to the board. But as the district court held, those were simply a means to put the matter in front of the board in the form that the board required, because that's the termination letter that Nissan gave to Mulati. That was the termination that Mulati tendered to the board. However, in every substantive pleading and anything that one could consider a binding judicial admission or anything of that nature, Mulati was straightforward with the board and consistent that the written dealer agreement expired.
Okay.
That is Mulati's position in front of the board itself.
Now, it's your position, and you may well be correct, that Mulati's conflicting representations before the board are totally irrelevant to the question before us. Is that your position?
I'm not sure I would adopt the characterization that he's made conflicting representations. His only representations have been made in his substantive pleadings, and those are not conflicting. But I do understand the question, and at this point, if you'll accept my position for a moment, that the tender of the protest to the board is not substantively binding, then I would say it is irrelevant. Those actual forms, those papers, those pieces of paper that got the protest into the board's clerk's office are not relevant to this case, at least not in the way Nissan is saying.
So if I were to try and boil everything that's been done here for the last 300 years, the only question here would be, is there a valid written agreement that subjects the parties to arbitration?
In force today, yes.
With that, what were the words you added?
In force today.
In force today.
Because
and your answer is
no.
There is not.
Absolutely, and I stress in force today. Maybe it's obvious, but just to make clear that the mootness point we raised here is not beside the point. Not only do we argue that written agreement expired on May 1, 1999, but there are different ways of looking at this record. And if you believe from your own analysis that there's some other point in time where you're just convinced that at least at that point there's no written dealer agreement in place, that's good enough for Mulati, because without the written dealer agreement in force containing an arbitration clause, there is no written agreement to arbitrate, and there is nothing, therefore, to send to an arbitrator. You need, under the Federal Arbitration Act, the existence of a written arbitration agreement. If that goes away at any point in time through as we stand here today, we no longer have a basis for this court to have this case. Another way of saying the same thing, of course, is you can't terminate an already expired agreement. You can't terminate an already expired contract. And there would be nothing to arbitrate in that instance. Now, of course, that raises the question, well, then what are you in front of the board over? If it's already expired and you admit that and there is no such agreement. And that is why I made the explanation before about the statute specifically anticipates and allows oral franchise arrangements between car dealers and manufacturers, and you can protest the termination of those as well. As long as we're on that subject, I'd like to just take issue with one thing that Mr. Russell said. He characterizes the extension letters and that Nissan has sent Malati over time, extending the time during which the parties did business before this finally fell apart. And he keeps saying that those letters extend the expiration date of the contract, or that Nissan kept writing to Malati offering to extend the written dealer agreement. Nowhere in the letters does Nissan say that, anytime and anywhere, and I believe this court recognized that in its first opinion in this case. What Nissan did was forbear termination. It forbore acting on alleged default. And what the parties were fighting about at the time had to do with the construction of facilities at the dealership. Nowhere did Nissan in those letters ever purport to extend the effective date of the written dealer agreement. And there's an important reason they didn't do that. I mean, they're sort of trying to have it both ways here. From the point of view of Nissan's leverage in this bargaining situation, they didn't want to concede to Malati that that agreement itself, that the written agreement, ever got beyond May 1st, 1999. It now today becomes convenient to make that argument. But back at the time when the parties were negotiating in the absence of a written agreement, Nissan had the bargaining leverage to say, you're out of contract. Your contract is expired. And they said it all over the place. And that is cited in our brief, and we give you the record cites of many times where the Nissan employees are saying to each other and to Malati that this contract has expired. This isn't just some aside comment that people are making. They used that in bargaining with Malati, that, hey, buddy, you better get with it because right now you don't even have a contract. You're expired. So parties negotiate in the absence of a contract. Parties do business in the absence of a contract, and maybe they patch it up and then move on. That happened in the past in this case, and you know that from the record. There were gaps when previous amendments to the written agreement expired. The parties got together, agreed on a new amendment or to a renewal, and retroactively that brought the written agreement back into force. Didn't happen this time, and as Judge Williams pointed out before, proposed amendment number 5, which did include an arbitration clause, was rejected. The only other thing I want to say about the estoppel argument that Nissan has made is that Nissan is free to waive its own rights anytime it wants. Nissan is not free to waive Malati's right. And the expiration date of the written contract is a material term of the contract that both sides had to agree if it was going to change. And what's more, they had to agree in writing. Malati never agreed to that. So Nissan can waive all it wants, but it hasn't changed a term of the contract by waiving. What it can do is decide not to end the franchise. It can keep supplying Malati with cars. And that's what it did. If the court has no further questions, I'll give back the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Okay.
Let me start with one observation, and that is that you've asked clearly, what is the contract that governs the parties' relationships today? And you didn't get an answer from Malati, and we have never gotten an answer from Malati. The significance of this is that Nissan has clear arguments contained in its briefs and maintained consistently throughout this litigation that the parties continue to do business under the dealer agreement and amendment number 4.
I did get an answer. We did get an answer. That there's no it's terminated. There's no contract. I take it that's the answer.
I'm sorry, then. I didn't hear that.
I mean, I think that's the answer. You know, we'll go back and we'll listen to the recording, but
Very good.
That's the answer.
In this
that you can do business without mm-hmm. contracts.
Council made statements about the filing it made before the Motor Vehicle Review Board and said it is conceivable to protest the termination of an oral franchise, and that is what it did here. That is inconsistent with the protest it actually filed. In the protest it actually filed, not just in the form, but in the second page that it filled out in its own hand, typing out its description as to what it was protesting, and what it said there in its own words was, the parties are doing business under the dealer agreement, the written dealer agreement, and Nissan lacks good cause to terminate that written dealer agreement, which it defined as the dealer agreement including Amendment Number 4. It did not protest the termination of an oral franchise. That's significant because when it took that position in front of the Motor Vehicle Review Board, it is that dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4, that Nissan became bound to comply with during the pendency of this now nearly six-year protest. So they took that position and secured the benefit of that injunctive relief. They can say elsewhere, but it expired. The material place is in the notice of protest it filed, which secured that injunctive relief. Finally, with respect to waiver, the letters, the notices of default, the notices of termination, all refer to the dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4, and they all refer to existing defaults under that same dealer agreement. Nissan's position with respect to the contract that governs the parties has been consistent throughout this period. If the panel has no further questions, I'll give up the rest of my time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Case will be taken under advisement. Thank you.